Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, Jim, here we are. It's Friday morning in Vancouver on a lovely day, and we've got some fascinating things in the markets out there, and we've got our listeners.
Bob, some of the headlines that caught our attention today. China's loans pushing world's poorest countries to collapse.
Yeah, well, guess what? China was, of course, roaring into any number of countries and projects and roads and all that sort of stuff and dams and putting up the money, but some of it by way of loans. And then now, boom's over. But, you know, at the end, the result is these countries who are going to end up with roads and dams and stuff that they can use. It's just the difficulty in paying for it. So,
well, the way China will say, well, okay, you're defaulting on your loan, so we're just going to move our navy into your port or install our army in the bases around your airport.
Unless China goes so broke that it can't pay for the fuel to move its equipment, so then that's possible. So. And well, I notice here's one on the side, not a headline, but for this week. But there is mentions of the big, you know, early May, the communist countries like Cuba and Russia, they have their big May Day parades and celebrations. Well, they were very modest in at the Kremlin this year, and I think canceled in Cuba, is because they can't afford it. Maybe the one in Moscow had one tank. So the communist countries can't afford to have their big demonstrations on their May Day special deals. It's fascinating.
Yes, Russia had a T-34 tank from World War II. I think it's because their other tanks might be busy. And yes, in Cuba, it was they couldn't afford the fuel for the parade. But yes, again, why do you have to run military hardware? Whatever happened to just, you know, marching bands?
Oh yeah,
or maybe they don't have any.
There's a link between the two. Mm. Russia has been funding Cuba for all these decades.
Ah, and they can't afford to do it now.
Cuba runs out of money.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we should say Cuba. I don't know.
Cuba Libre.
I don't have any language skills other than English. So.
Well, I can order food in Spanish.
Whoa.
Well, yeah, taco,
well, I
burrito.
I can't have the recipe. I just put my finger on it. You know, yeah. I'll have one of those.
Yeah, I can order food in lots of languages. I'll never starve to death when I go on tour. Another headline as well connected to China. Move over, U.S. dollar. China wants the yuan to be the global currency. Are they anywhere near doing that?
Not a hope in hell. I wrote one on it a couple of weeks ago because it was getting to be headlines all the time. And then when the dollar was weak a while ago, they were trashing it. And but the theme, Jim, is that it is financial markets that determine what is the senior currency and what is the world's financial center. And that little essay I did goes back to Roman times when it was Rome and its various currencies then Rome collapsed, and then it was Florence with the florin, the gold florin, lovely coin. And then in Augsburg, in the Harz Mountains in Germany, there was a tremendous, one of the greatest silver camps in history developed. So they were mining huge amounts of silver, and prosperity was there. And in the 1400s, the Fugger, if you have to be careful with that one, F-U-G-G-E-R Bank, did become the biggest bank in history based upon Augsburg. So then the financial center became Augsburg, and the coin was the Thaler. And in German, that Thaler meant valley, and that was the valley where the wealth came, and then eventually Thaler became dollar. So then the prosperity shifted to the North Sea with the herring fishery and all that sort of stuff, and trade at the Lower Rhine. And so then Bruges harbor there became an important financial center and trade center. But then its harbor sealed it up. So then it moved to Antwerp in the 1500s, and that became the world's financial and commercial center. And then the Spanish Netherlands, which were nearby and a dreadful authoritarian people, and they raided Antwerp, and the some 7,000 people were murdered and about 1,000 buildings destroyed. So then the wise Dutch moved the financial center to Amsterdam, which was unassailable, and so it was the Guilder in Amsterdam. And then eventually, beginning in the early 1700s, the action shifted to London and Sterling. And then in the 1930s, 1940s, with World War II, then New York became the financial center, and the dollar became. So the concept that the Chinese currency can become the senior currency is totally absurd. I mean, it is, market forces are so powerful, and trade transactions and all that are just so powerful that, and especially that. So it's, but it's not a, it's a communist country. No bloody way, because each of those centers was open freedom. So no, the U.S. dollar is going to stay as the senior currency until not some country or some newspaper decides otherwise. It'll stay there until market forces change. So, and that could be hundreds of years from now. Who knows?
And if people are defaulting on their Chinese loans, as we talked about at the start of the show, they won't be getting the yuans that they want to promote their product.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Plus, a U.S. dollar, if you offered it to somebody in the deepest, darkest part of the Amazonian jungle, they would know what it was. I don't know if it had a picture of Mao on it, they would.
Right. Well, especially, guys, go back to the old silver dollar. Gosh, to have one of those that was real, that was something.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, before we get to further headlines, I have a question. People are wondering if the price of gold would go much higher if everybody who held gold right now demanded the physical product, because there are so many rumors that there isn't any gold, actual gold, to back up all the gold they've sold.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't go along with that one. The in a post-bubble contraction, the careful money goes to the most liquid places, and the most liquid items are U.S. Treasuries shorter than 1 year, and gold. So the careful money then going to U.S. Treasuries puts a bid in for the dollar, and the careful money going to the liquidity of gold puts a bid in for gold. So I don't see any huge price changes in dollar terms for gold. But as you know, I do a lot of work on gold's real price. And there's various ways of measuring that. One is, of course, by the rate of inflation, the CPI. And then another way is even more fun, is to deflate gold by the CRB, the commodities index, and that's a proxy for mining costs. And then the clearest one is, of course, to deflate price of gold by crude oil. And mining costs to operate a mine, you know, with all those blasters and diggers and huge trucks and machinery, takes a lot of energy. Crude oil is a proxy for that. So since the fall, gold, price of crude oil has dropped hugely relative to gold. So even today's operating gold mines, their costs of energy should be falling, and that would be improving their operating margins. So this is how one looks at gold in a post-bubble deflationary period, is that typically the prices of most everything fall relative to gold. So the gold miners make money because their costs are dropping relative to the price of bullion. And hey, there's always an example I use is Homestake stock, and after the crash in 1931, you could buy the stock for $9 a share, and the price of gold was fixed at $20.67 an ounce. So if you follow this through to the end of 1932, when gold was still fixed at $20.67 an ounce, their earnings were up something like 130% with no change in the price of gold. That was because their costs fell. And also the stock was up something like 130% as well. And that was in the face of the 1931 and 32 bear market in the S&P. So this is what we're looking for in the gold stocks, is eventually it's not just that gold stocks will be going up in a deflationary environment. It's that they will be outperforming at times the S&P. So that means that ordinary fund managers, equity fund manager guys, if they see a couple of quarters with the gold stocks outperforming the S&P, well, the hot fund managers, they may not want to buy golds, but they have to get in. So this is where we're looking for a multi-year bull market for the gold stocks. And it doesn't matter what the price of gold does in dollars. What matters is what the price of gold does relative to the mining costs. So who knows? Maybe the U.S. could have a big reform, and the Federal Reserve could be reformed, and the way to reform the Federal Reserve is to put the U.S. dollar on a gold standard. So then you then got it back to a fixed price. So then how does a mining analyst calculate whether they're going to make any money or not? Well, they have to look at the mining costs because the price of gold is going to be fixed. So the method I work with here, Jim, is it works whether you're in an inflationary environment, deflationary environment, or whether the gold is trading relative to the dollar, or if it's on a convertibility and the price is fixed. It works throughout whatever happens to the U.S. dollar. And I think at some time the dollar will be made convertible, because it's the only way to constrain reckless central banks. And central banks will always get reckless because they think they can run the world.
Now, do central banks have to keep hiking interest rates right now to control inflation, or have they done so much so fast already?
Well, that's a promotion. In a boom, treasury bill rates go up, and the Fed follows treasury bill rates and raises its administered rate. Now, I'm watching this very closely because the six-month rate reached its high a couple of months ago. And yet the Fed is still talking about raising rates. And so I'm just watching this from seeing. Now, you know, the 6 month has gone up a little bit in the last few weeks, but I think that what's going to happen here is that with the possibility of a U.S. recession, and that is due to the fact that the yield curve inverted, and every inversion of the yield curve has been followed by a recession. So that's built in. So at some point here, the 6 month Treasury bill rate will start to go down, and then I would watch to see that a couple of months later, then the Federal Reserve will start lowering its administered rate. So no, the Fed doesn't create monetary policy. It follows the markets.
And U.S. consumers are still spending. They still are getting jobs. They still have a labor shortage. Is the Fed going to keep hiking rates until job losses happen?
Yeah, as I say, the Fed's following the T-bill rate. But anyways, with the employment numbers have been good, and that was because when they did the COVID lockdown, that was the most extraordinary shock in the history of financial markets. So then people are trying to get back to normal.
Yeah.
So this is keeping the employment numbers very good. But I'm hanging my hat on the fact that the curve did invert, and every inversion has been followed by a recession. And so we'll just watch the interest rates. Commodity prices have been weakening. That's a sign of potential slowing of the global economy. So I think comment related to the Fed, I think the 6 month T-bill rate probably won't get to new highs, and it'll probably in the next few months roll over and start heading down, in which case by October, perhaps the Fed would then start cutting rates. It's administered rate. It would be following the natural changes in the money markets.
Headline: commercial real estate prices slide for the first time since 2011.
Yeah, that just sort of gets your attention, doesn't it? Yeah, because it was the commercial real estate began its crash in 2007. And then it would be finally clearing its problems by the time we get to 2011. So it's one of those trailing numbers. So if you're writing the headline, you could say, yeah, this is the worst since 2011. And that was somewhat better than what was a couple of years earlier than that. So it was a good headline.
Another headline here. World's top diamond polishing hub warns of a difficult year ahead. And I was just going to take my diamonds out to get them polished.
No, this is where they take the raw diamonds and cut them into lovely, attractive diamonds. And I think something maybe around 2000 there was a comment about that. But I do know that in the early 1930s, the diamond business in Holland really hit the wall, because it's a very carefully rigged market by De Beers. They have a rig on the diamond market like you wouldn't believe. But if you look at, say, on the boom, the amount of diamonds that were being purchased in the U.S., and then also with new buyers in China and Asia, hey, The De Beers diamond cartel has had some very good times, and now it's starting to go the other way. So I think the diamond market can get hit as hard as it was, as hard as it got hit in the 1930s.
Well, technically, artificial diamonds now are better than the real thing. They're pure.
Well, I'm not so sure on gemstones, but yeah, they certainly use them industrially.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For grinding and so on.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Bob, always fun chatting with you.
Well, good to be with you, Jim, and look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy, the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Find us on Twitter at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.